Blog Talk Radio.
Heart Talk with Miss E. This is our last broadcast for the year of 2011. Can you believe it? And we are only 5 days away from Christmas. And I'm sure for many, this has been a time of reflection, as we discussed with our guest 2 weeks ago, Ms. Shawn Ernle, and reflecting on life and choices and decisions that we've made. A lot of people are looking into what are we going to do about the future, what options am I going to have, what new goals am I setting for myself, and what new adventures am I going to try. And some people are wondering, is it going to be more of the same? However, we know that life calls us to many different doors that we did not expect to walk through during the course of not only a year, but a day, a month, a week, a moment. And our guest this evening is someone whom I've had the opportunity of knowing, first of all, as a little girl, and was just really blessed to be able to reconnect with her a couple of years ago as a young adult. And this year, she has walked through many doors that many of us would not care to open, but she has opened each one and walked through victoriously and basically even with a smile on her face. And we were having some difficulty connecting. We spoke about half an hour ago, and the one call that I see coming in does not seem to be her, so I'm going to check this out. But our guest is Ms. Ebony Merriman. Let me see if she's on. Hello? Okay, that does not seem to be her. However, Ebony, having gone through the foster care system, having just a lot of challenges that she shared in one of our newsletters and with me personally, of challenges that she faced as an adolescent and finally coming to terms with who she is and embracing life as a young adult. And unfortunately, and fortunately, because there have been a lot of positive things that have come out of this journey, shortly after her birthday, last year, after her 25th birthday, she was diagnosed as having ovarian cancer. And looking at her, talking to her, spending time laughing and playing with her, you would not know it. However, she has really walked through this situation, through this journey, really being a source of encouragement to others. And I just see all the time people are saying, you know, Ebony, you're such an encouragement to me. You always lead me right. You always take me around the right path. And my question to her is, do you ever get tired of taking care of everyone else? Because I know I sure do sometimes. Very honest and forthright young lady. She was working in a medical setting herself at the time that she was diagnosed. So I am looking at this number here, and I'm not sure what number this is. This is a 510 area code number. If that is you, if you will say something just to let me know. I'm not sure. So this happened the last time as well. And it's not on me. So at this time, I'm going to let you just listen to our lead-in song one more time while I try to handle a technical issue here. Listen to just the intro to our song on our CD, Rachel's Weeping for Her Children. Story rather than my telling it, because in my work with the young people that I have worked with and I've developed relationships with throughout the years, I honestly believe that there is no way that anyone can tell their story like they can. I try because I have a lot, I have the platform in a lot more places a lot of times than our young people do. And I want to tell their stories. And I've tried to integrate my own emotions, my own thought set of where they could be, but I don't feel that I can adequately convey that to the world like they can. So that is why I do this radio program, for one, to create a platform for our young people to be able to share their journeys with you. When I go out to people to ask them to support For a Child's Heart, I'm not asking for me. A lot of times people look at and say, well, why don't you apply for this grant? Why don't you do that? And my thing is, I'm too busy trying to do the work. I can't be writing and following through, and that's why we need support. But I've found it very interesting. Every time we have had an event, and whether it's someone from our board of directors, someone from the community, someone in my circle of friends or family, once they meet our young people and meet someone, and especially if it's someone they've heard me call their name, their reaction, their response is totally different than just having heard me talk about it. And then they're all excited, and I'm saying that I think my microphone was cut off all this time. I have just been talking and talking and talking. Let me look in the chat room. Was someone trying to tell me? No. I was just talking, and it looks like the microphone was off. Wow. If someone in the chat room will just hit me a note and tell me what is the last thing you heard from me, I may have to start all over. I don't want to repeat myself. Oh, my gosh. I was talking. Okay, well, since no one has said anything yet, I'm going to repeat what I said before. What I was saying before I was alerted that you were not hearing me was that in my work with For a Child's Heart Incorporated, I try to convey the stories and the experiences of the young people who I've developed relationships with and those whom I've provided services to, those who I've walked through a part of their journeys with. And I try to share that and convey the heart of that to the people where I have an opportunity and where I have a platform to speak in their behalf. And what I was saying is that no matter how much or how well I think I'm getting the point across, it never comes across as clearly and as profoundly and as with much as much impact as when the young people are able to tell their stories themselves. And I stated that it has never failed that when we have had, for Four Child Heart has sponsored an event or program and has had a young person to speak or share or read or do something within the program, and the audience has heard them for themselves, the response is always just heartfelt. And then all of a sudden, people are ready to do something to help. And my response is generally, I've been telling you that all along. What did you think? But there's something different hearing it from heart to heart. And this is at the perfect opportunity because as I'm talking about speaking, about hearing it from the young people themselves heart to heart, I can exhale now. Here is Miss Ebony. Are you there, Ebony?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Okay. I'm just glad that you are here. I've been talking, and then there's another caller on the line. I cut my mic off to be able to speak to the person in the background, and then I never turned my mic back on. So I was just talking, and even the audience wasn't even hearing me. So this is part for the course. We're just walking through the doors, and I just want to say that you are an awesome example to me how to walk through doors, unexpected doors, and just go through and do what you have to do. So how are you feeling this evening?
I'm good. I'm just so tired.
You're tired. Okay.
Yeah,
well, let's see if we can have some of our listeners to energize you a little bit. And I just shared very, very briefly a little bit about, you know, the story of my having known you as a young child and having the opportunity to reconnect with you a couple of years ago. And then just last year, you're receiving a diagnosis of terminal illness. And then I also want to talk about your gifts, your talents, the things that inspire you to keep going. I also commented on the fact that a lot of times I see that people are commenting and thanking you for the inspiration that you've given them in facing their challenges. And I was just wondering, do you ever get tired of taking care of everyone else?
I mean, just my instinct, no, not really, because that's just the type of person I am and the personality that I have. I just always want to do for others, like, you know, before I do for myself. That's just, I don't know the type of person that I am. So just off top, no. I actually like helping other people, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And I say, you know, that comes with the territory of being a Miss E. I call you our baby Miss E. So tell us just a little bit about, you know, the early years of your life. And I know that really sort of the major part of this leg of your journey began when you were 3 years old.
Yeah, when I was three, my mom passed away. Her boyfriend had killed her. So then from there, I grew up with three brothers, and I got separated from two of them because we had different dads, and I grew up with just one brother. We started off in foster care, then my grandma took us in, and pretty much she raised us till we were about like 16, 17 years old. Then we went on to live with my dad, and then that didn't really work out too well because he had that drug problem. So from there, that's when we kind of like started getting on our, being our own and having to like do things for ourselves. So, yeah.
Wow. And some people would think, well, you got to live with your grandmother, so, you know, maybe it wasn't that bad. because you didn't go through all of the foster care placements, because you were basically just in, what, one foster care placement at a younger age?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then went to live with your grandmother. But what people don't realize is that even when you're with extended family, sometimes there's some sense of discomfort or not quite just feeling connected. And I understand
yeah.
you had some of that. What was your experience and your feeling even with being around extended family?
It's just different because you don't have nor the mother or the father in the household. You just have a grandma. And my grandma's pretty old school. She was real strict. You know, I knew she loved us, but she didn't tell us every day. She didn't talk to us about our future, what we wanted to be. So we kind of, like, felt a little misguided growing up, not having all the proper tools to use.
Mm-hmm.
So when we actually did, you know, were able to get on our own, we were kind of, like, lost and confused because that's something that we weren't, you know, used to or were taught. So, yeah, and it just wasn't a lot of communication in the house. So, yeah, it was different from having, you know, a regular home with your parents there rather than growing up with all these questions that aren't really being answered and kind of having to learn on your own what to do for yourself.
Right. Who were, I guess, sort of like the surrogate extended family members or the surrogate moms or the mentors who gave you any kind of direction? And who were
there?
Some of the people?
Well, I know a lot of what I learned in life is just from my mistakes and just looking at others' mistakes, me not wanting to be in, you know, the situation that they're in. So I try to just do my best to stay out of the way of, you know, trouble and, you know, all that stuff. Like, I've never been in trouble with the law because that's just a place I know where I don't want to be. So, you know, just my common sense tells me don't do this and that won't happen. And then another thing that's just helped me so much in life is just church. My church family, just the Bible, praying, having faith. I think without that I probably wouldn't, you know, be the positive person that I am today. So that has a big, you know, effect on everything as well.
Right. So you did establish your own sort of trek of having a career, and you've had two certifications?
Yeah, actually. I went to school for nurse assistant, and then I also, for a second job, I was school for bartending, so I have a certificate in bartending and then my certified nurse assistant.
Yes, and so when we connected, you were doing this nursing, and you were actually, I think probably until just a couple of months ago, you were still in school, right?
I start school in January 9th, I'm going to school for surgical tech. But,
okay.
Yeah, I was trying to work, but, you know, with my whole, like, chemo and all that, I'm not allowed to. So, you know, I'm just trying to find stuff to do to keep me busy and occupied.
Okay. So, all having just overcome all of these odds, you know, just having the, you know, the odds stacked against you, per se, statistically, and you were had stated before, you know, that your greatest achievement was having gotten through all of that, like I said, without a criminal or police record, without any just substance abuse issues, without all the things, without being homeless, without all the things, the negative stereotypes that come against our young people having come through the care system with the violence and, you know, in which, you know, your mother passed, all of that, and you still were able to come out ahead. And then tell us, What happened last June?
Last June, as far as my diagnosis and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was actually more of like September-ish. I don't know. It was like everything happened so fast.
Yeah, it did.
I was having like these bad pains in my shoulder. And, you know, I'm just thinking it's like a muscle pain, so I would just, like, massage it out. But one day as I was massaging it out, I felt there was a lump in my neck. And it didn't hurt or anything. It was just hard. So I didn't really pay any mind to it because just first thought, when you feel a lump, you know, you're not going to assume you have cancer. You're just going to be like, oh, I have a lump. Like, no biggie. So I think probably a few months went by, and it was kind of getting bigger. So working in the hospital, everybody was telling me, oh, get that checked, get that checked. And I'm just like, okay, I'm going to go get it checked. So I went and got it checked. And at first I thought it was from a cat scratch because I had just, like, gotten a little kitten at that time. And so they were giving me antibiotics. And, like, 2 weeks later, it was still there. So then they ended up doing x-rays just on my neck area. And when they did the x-rays, they saw that there was activity in my chest. And they were like, okay, well, let's give them a full-body x-ray. So they gave me a full-body x-ray, and they found activity in my neck, my lymph nodes, like my chest and on my ovaries. And so they did a biopsy. And then when they did the biopsy, they sent it out to different labs, and it came back as cancer. And it was just a big ordeal where they didn't know, like, originally where it started. So it was just really, like, confusing and stressful at first because it's like, okay, I have this cancer, but I don't know what kind it is. I don't know where it came from. Don't know how I got it. I don't really have a lot of history in my family with cancer. So it kind of just, like, popped up out of nowhere. So since then, I've just been doing chemo, different types of chemo. So some haven't worked. Some have worked and then took off the market, not being made anymore, so then I would have to switch over to a new one. So it's been over a year now since I've been doing my treatment through just, you know, trying to get everything under control with that.
Wow. And so I just the day-to-day things of having to go in for the chemo, having to go to all these medical appointments, and I know in January you went, and thank you to those who supported HART and being able to contribute to some degree to your being able to go to Tulsa to the Cancer Treatment Center of America. And I know really when the opportunity came up for you, it was like almost unexpected at the time. Tell us about that trip.
It was very nice to get out there and go because that was my first, second opinion. And they were really, like, motivating, like, to just get out there. Like, they paid for, I think, my ticket, but everything else I had to pay for myself, which that's when HART came in. And they helped me with all that for my food and, you know, stuff like that. But, yeah, pretty much they were telling me the same thing that my doctor would tell me. And they were offering me treatments out there, but, you know, just, it wouldn't make sense to go all the way to Oklahoma every, because at the time I think I was doing treatment every 3 weeks, so it wouldn't have made any sense to keep going back out there every 3 weeks just for treatment when I could get the same type of treatment where I'm at now. But it was good just to get that, you know, confirmation, that second opinion of a big organization like that and the type of people and doctors that they have. So it brought me more comfort towards my situation. I didn't have as much questions, and I wasn't as confused as I originally were. So it was a good experience to go.
And I remember you're saying that people were actually surprised that you were there for that because of looking at you and your age and your youthfulness and everything. What was that like?
Well, even, you know, when I go to chemo now, I was still the youngest patient there. Like, every time I see a patient, you know, they're older, they look sick, they can barely walk, like, they're tired. And, you know, here I come, like, I'm ready for chemo, and I'm just, you know, just ball of energy. And, you know, they look at me, they're like, oh, my gosh, you're too young to have cancer, especially this type. And, you know, even for it to be stage four, like, I don't look like I have stage four cancer, so people just don't assume that I have cancer. So I know when I went to the cancer center in Oklahoma, they were, you know, a lot of people had providers with them. It was them, and then there was, like, you know, like a support system there. So my friend went with me, and we were, like, actually the two youngest there. Everybody else were, they were, like, probably in their, you know, early, the youngest age I saw was, like, probably in their late 30s, maybe. But here I am in my mid-20s, and I go to get something to eat, and they're like, oh, so what brings you to Oklahoma? Are you here to, you know, to take care of somebody? And I'm like, no, I'm actually the patient. And they're like, what? And I get that a lot, so, you know, I guess it's a blessing.
You're tweeting or Facebooking back, you know, just sharing some of the experiences that you were actually able to find humor in, despite everything that was going on. And you just make jokes of certain things. And I think your humor and the way that you perceive things has a lot to do with what has kept you throughout the course of this process.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then obviously I think there was a question about someone trying to determine what their ethnicity was, and it was just all kinds of little things. It was almost like people were just felt like they were just privileged to walk up to you because you just did not fit any box that they had to put you in.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I'll make a joke about it and they'll get all serious, like they don't know whether to laugh, they don't know whether to, you know, they don't know how to like react to it. So I bust out laughing and they'll just be like, oh my gosh, like, don't joke like that. But it's funny because it's like, you know, I'm the one dealing with it. So I
right.
just make humor of it.
Right. But then on the flip side of that, beyond the laughter, we know that there are other emotions that go on. Like, you know, today you were saying that you were tired. And I know that some of that is just the whole physical process. Some of that is the emotional part. What are some of the not so exciting moments that you've experienced, and how have you dealt with those?
Just, you know, it is a big mental thing. Like, once you get over the mental process of, like, having cancer, then you're pretty much okay. Because I know in the beginning it was very depressing. You know, before I got diagnosed with cancer, I've never been hospitalized. I barely got sick, never broken a bone. Like, nothing was ever wrong with me. So just to pop up with this, it's like, you know, every day I have a doctor's appointment. You know, every week I have labs. I'm being poked constantly. I get pains. I've been admitted to the ER, you know, a few times over the last month. Like, it's just a lot, and it's depressing. And, of course, the first thing you think of when you have cancer is you think of death. Like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to die. You know, but it's not always that matter. But, you know, at the end of the day, regardless of how positive I am, that is something that, you know, even if it's for a brief second of the day, it might still pop in my head. Like, you know, people really died from this. So it's a big thing. To me, I make light of the situation. And sometimes I even forget that I have cancer just because I don't feel like I do. I don't act like I do. You know, I go about life as, it's, you know, a regular, you know, every day is normal. But then at the end of the day, it's like, you know, it is a serious matter that sometimes I don't even take, you know, that serious. But, yeah, and then it's just, you know, the physical aspects of it, too. Sometimes mentally I'm ready to get up and go, like, but my body is just like, like, you ain't going nowhere. You're going to lay here for a while. So I have to constantly, like, debate and, you know, fight with my mind and then my body because, in my mind, I'm still wanting to be active, but physically, I'm still, like, wore out from, like, chemo or whatever. So, but, yeah.
And I'm sure that must be frustrating to want to get up.
Yeah, it is. It is. Because I'm not the type to just lay around all day and not do anything. I like to stay active. And, you know, that's another way for me to kind of get away from reality. Like, as long as you're not thinking about something, you're not worried about it. You know, if you're laying around all day not doing that, and then, of course, you have all the time in the world to just think about it. So I try not to think about it and stay active. But sometimes it's just not possible. So I just deal with it.
And there's a balance between the two. And I think we have two extremes in which people tend to deal with crises. They either totally just mope in it and just go all the way spiral down, or they do get really, really busy and never sit down, never do anything that will allow them to think about. Then they run their engines out. But
yeah.
I think the key is that balance, and it's a fine line between allowing the time to reflect, to think about, you know, what it is that I'm really facing, how this is impacting my life, and what I can do to make a difference. And my thinking, and then as a result, how I'm handling the physical restriction, and then also that time to just break down. And I know that you have a very close relationship with someone else that is very dear to my heart, who had also endured a life-threatening illness as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't ask for permission to say her name, and I don't know if she's even listening to the call, but we'll just call her Miss M.
Okay.
And she chooses to participate, but we know that she, did you know her when she was going through her medical?
Yeah, but we, I've known her since I was, you know, young, but, you know, mm-hmm. I was always a quiet, you know, type of person. I don't get too close to people, or, you know, at the time, you know, I was moving so much, it was hard for me to just make a relationship with anyone. But, so she was always, you know, in my life, but we were never, you know, that close. We weren't a sociable like we are now.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of after I had got diagnosed with cancer is when she definitely reached out to me, and she let me know that she was there. Because there's been a lot of people that I've met, and they've been like, oh, I'm here for you. Let me know if you need anything. But then I'll never hear from them again. You know, she was a person where she was the one making initiative to call me, regardless if I was returning her calls. Because, you know, I do that, as you know, firsthand. I'm not a good, you know, caller backer, or sometimes I just don't answer the phone either because I'm just too tired. Sometimes I don't feel like talking. And some people get pushed away from that. But she actually, you know, it didn't push her away at all. It just kind of made her go harder. So she definitely showed me that she was there, and she became one of my biggest support systems. So, yeah, I didn't know her. I knew her, but I wasn't involved at the time that she was going through her issues, but she definitely was around during mine.
And I think she's probably was able to be persistent there because she knew what it was like to be on that other side.
Yeah.
Depression. A lot of times people reach out, and when you're in that state, you really want someone to seek you out, but sometimes it's hard to put your hand back out there or to receive it. And it takes somebody who's been there to really know what it's like. So I believe,
mm-hmm.
again, that God places people in our lives that can truly relate to what we're going through, and it's there for a reason. And I hope that she
yeah.
will share her story with us at some point. And I remember one of the conversations that you and I had at the beginning of your diagnosis that, you know, when I first heard it, I couldn't say anything, really, initially. And it was like, you know, for me, it was like, after everything, why this? And then it was like right after we had connected, and it was like, okay, so as I finally said it to you, I don't think there are any accidents or no coincidences, and I believe that it happened just about this time. So, but my prayer for you was that this would give you a different perspective of life to embrace and hold and move forward in your purpose and your destiny. And then one day I looked up, and that is almost exactly what you had written on your Facebook page, and tears just ran down my eyes because I down my eyes, from my eyes down my cheeks. And I was so glad that you said that, because I didn't really, I feel like to have said that to you initially was to almost like, you know, oh, well, Don't cry. Don't be upset. You know, there's, you know, how people say, well, things are better for a reason, because we have to go through the process. But you seem to have grasped that so quickly. I was like, wow. And every conversation that we've had, you know, except, you know, when you've had your low days, and you're right about being hard to catch up with, and my dealing with my issues about not wanting to be a nuisance. However, I'm really pleased that you have giving me the confidence to know that when you really do need me, that you would reach out. And I think sometimes that's a hard place for people to be. So I just want you to know that that lets me know that you trust me, and I feel good about that. Mm-hmm. And anything that we can do, we will try our best to help. And hopefully that our listeners and the people who support us realize that this is what happens on a day-to-day basis. You know, people are going through things, and our young people are going through things, whether it's not, may not be a medical issue, it could be an academic issue, a financial issue, an emotional issue. or all of the above. These things are going on, and this is what the intent of heart is, and it doesn't stop when you turn 18, you know, because what happened to you at a younger age is impacting everything that you're faced with even today. One of the things that really got me, that of all the things you've been, there have been two, well, three major things that every time I come up, I just like, oh, gosh, not this. I think my emotional reaction was probably stronger than yours, and maybe, I don't know. But one of the first things was when your insurance, now here you are working in a medical facility, had benefits, et cetera, and then all of a sudden, what happens with your insurance?
So I've been working at the hospital for about 2 years, you know, full time. I used to work my butt off, like, you know, working overtime, time and a half. You know, I had full covered insurance. But as soon as I stopped not being able to work in the hospital, because, you know, when you take chemo, your immune system is weak, you're not supposed to be around sick people. Well, because I work in the hospital, I'm around sick people all the time. So my doctor, you know, I'm on, you know, medical leave from my job. I'm still employed through there. I'm just not able to work. And my doctor won't clear me to go back to work yet. Otherwise, I would take all the risk in the world because I need my bills paid. But, you know, realistically, that just isn't going to happen. So as I'm not working there, I'm not considered full-time anymore. And they don't know when I'll be able to go back. So they ended up giving away my position and writing me off on call whenever I am able to come back to work. And when you work on call, you don't get insurance. You have to pay for it. So, you know, at the time, I'm in the middle of my chemos and x-rays and all this stuff costs money. Well, and in the midst of all that, my insurance, you know, got cut off because my position got given away. And then so it took a while for me to go to, like, apply for, like, Medi-Cal and stuff. And some of the stuff that I was getting, Medi-Cal wasn't even, like, covering. So I think I had to miss, like, a couple of treatments in the beginning of all that until everything got squared away. And even certain places where I got recommended to, they wouldn't take me because they don't take, like, Medi-Cal patients and stuff like that. So, yeah, that was just the biggest ordeal with that.
That just, you know, and I think I even, well, no, I didn't fuss yet. Then the next part of that was when they changed your chemo.
Yeah.
And they said they were no longer, and they had changed the chemo, and this is one that was working best for you because they said it was the most aggressive for the type of cancer that they had diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the one that you had the least amount of side effects from, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was that one? What was that chemo? In case anyone is listening and you have access to it.
it's called Doxil.
Doxil?
Like D-I-X-O-L. Yeah, Doxil.
Okay. And you were doing that, and that was maintaining things quite well. And then all of a sudden they tell you one day.
There's actually a worldwide shortage. Like, nobody has it. And nobody knows the reason why they stopped making it or why they took it off the market. But they just, I don't know, it's not being made at the moment. And they don't have any idea when they will get a dose in, like when they'll start putting it back out. And at first my doctor was kind of like, okay, well, we'll just like wait around for it. But then my tumor in my stomach had started growing, and I was admitted in the hospital for like 3 days. So he was like, okay, yeah, we can't wait anymore. Like, she needs treatment, like, right away. So then that's when they switched me to the next thing closest to Doxil, which that's what I'm on right now. And Doxil is so strong that I only was able to take it once a month, which was cool on my behalf because, you know, I don't have to be in there, like, every day. But now the one I'm taking now, I have to take it Monday through Friday for a full week, and then I take 2 weeks off, and I go again and do it all over again. And first, I was really stressed about it because when I originally first started chemo, you know, all of my hair fell out. I had these horrible side effects. I just was like, I can't see how anyone could live like this because if I had to, like, do that for the long amount of time that I've been doing chemo, like, I would have went crazy. So that was, like, horrible. You know, and with Doxil, it was just, like, completely opposite. I was able to do treatments and you know, go about my business, and my hair was able to grow back. So with this new chemo, I was like, oh, my gosh, like, is it going to be, like, the first one? Like, is it going to be, like, you know, my second one? I didn't know what to expect from it, so I was really nervous. So, but it's actually holding up pretty good. It's pretty much the same as dog food. Just, I just take it more often than I do dog food. And I still have my hair so far, so, and I don't, you know, besides being really tired, there's not really any major things to complain about, so.
And then they were going to refer you to, they referred you to Stanford.
I got referred to Stanford, but they didn't take Medi-Cal patients, so then they referred me to UCSF, and I was seen there. And they were actually pretty good, too, because they have a special program for, like, certain type of cancers. And, you know, that's where I saw a special ovarian cancer doctor. And they're going to present my cancer to the actually, today it was presented at the tumor board. So I'll probably talk to them later on this week to see, like, you know, what was discussed or whatnot. So, yeah,
okay.
That's going to be great.
And I think that's when I lost it, and I felt bad because I felt like I just fussed at you because I was asking you how much would it cost, you know, if you paid out of pocket. And you said, oh, too much? And I said, nothing is too much. This is your life. You know, they don't know if you could come up with it or not. We can find it. You know, I was determined that we're going to come up with this money because my take is that there shouldn't be any monetary limitations to keep someone healthy. You know, and Eliza, so I was fit to be tied. And you sort of looked at me like, lady.
Yeah, when I asked, it was exactly what I thought. Just for the consultation, just for the, you know, the interview or whatever part of it was like, I don't know, $800. So that's not even telling me anything else that would have came along with it. So that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, but I figure people come up with that much to go to a dinner, okay, when they do these elections and all of that, and I figure somebody somewhere has it, and we all just don't know where it is. Somebody can come up with it. That's how, you know, much I believe that it was possible. And when you start asking people questions about what it is, they just assume that you don't have resources. You know, you're a child of the king, so they have no idea what you have, and I still... And I think by that time you said, okay, like, be quiet.
Yeah.
You said that with your expression, not with your words. But I'm glad to know. And that, see, that's another area of faith, too, not just trusting that God opened another door for you to walk through where you're receiving treatment and you're feeling comfortable. And then you had also saved up to buy yourself a car.
Yeah.
And what happened with that situation?
I still have it. At the time, I was I had my own apartment, and it was me and my brother, and I was saving up to get a car, and I had got, you know, backtracked a lot because, you know, at the time, you know, I'm trying to help out myself, and, you know, then my brother had issues, and he needed somewhere to stay, so then he came and stayed with me, and a lot of the money that I was saving for a car, I had to end up to use towards, you know, my deposit in the apartment, and I had to furnish it, and, you know, a PG&E, groceries, like, so when you first, you know, move into a place, it does cost, like, a big lump sum of money because you got to get all, it wasn't a planned out thing for me. It kind of was like, okay, I need to do this in 2 weeks and get it done. So at that time when I had my money saved for my car, I ended up using that money to, you know, get my apartment so that I could help my brother out as well. So, and then, you know, that didn't end up working out too well because he ended up, you know, getting into some trouble and I went to jail. And I just felt like, wow, like all this money I just spent to help him out and it kind of came back and bit me in the butt in the end. Like, but, you know, I just kind of started all over again, just started saving up and I was able to save up enough to, you know, get a reliable car. So I still have it. But at the moment, you know, I'm staying with Miss M. Because I couldn't afford to stay in my apartment anymore because, you know, I'm not making the money that I used to make when working at the hospital. I'm only, you know, making what the state gives me, and I kind of just have to work with that.
Right.
So.
Well, even with all of that, I mean, I consider myself a strong person. I consider myself a determined person. But I think with each of those things, I don't know if I would have handled it like you.
Yeah.
I'm not there in the middle of the night. But I just think at some point I would have just said, okay, enough is enough. And what is it that keeps you going?
You know, I just, I have that personality where it's like, if you really have no control over the situation, like you honestly can't do anything about it, then why stress about it? Like, you, all you could do is pray and put it in God's hands. And even from my past, like, I've just been through so much for as long as I can remember. I've just been through so much in life. This is just, like, you know, something else for me to just deal with. It's kind of like once you've been, you know, through so much, you kind of get used to it, you adapt to it. I mean, you just have to figure out a situation and keep it moving. Like, that's all I really can do. I just have to have, like, faith that everything is, you know, for a reason. Like, I'm not going all to do this for nothing. Like, there has to be a bigger picture at the end of all of this when it's all said and done. So I just keep telling myself that. Just,
so you're able to focus on the bigger picture. And you seem like you have enough trust that God wouldn't do anything without purpose.
Yeah. They say if you have faith, then you shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't stress if you have faith. You should already know everything's going to be all right in the end. And it is really true when they say, well, does not kill you makes you stronger. I think everything that I've been through in life has just built me up to be the person that I am today to even handle this situation the way that I do handle it.
That is just awesome. That's awesome. And like I tell you, a lot of days you inspire me. I can get up, you know, and see something that you've written, you know, on Facebook, or maybe I'll, you know, talk to you and just hear something that you've done today, and it just big smile to my face. And it's like, girl, you know, what you doing? You got to get up so you can keep up with her. Be there, you know, with and for her. So that's awesome. And the other thing I want to talk about are your gifts and your talents. And one I just discovered, but the other I discovered, I guess, last year. No, that was earlier this year, too. And one is your artwork. You are a beautiful artist. When I came to place and I was looking at these beautiful, you know, prints on the walls, and I was saying, who did this? And you told me that you did. So how much do you enjoy your artwork?
I enjoy it a lot. Like, it's a big stress reliever, you know. Like, I started off drawing when I just had, like, was going through things. And, I mean, I didn't have, I'm not the type of person who just, like, go out. I don't have a lot of friends. I'm a very personal person. I don't think anyone's probably ever seen me cry because I'm just, like, I'm too prideful in some, like, certain ways. So my artwork's just a way to kind of just let all that frustration and stress and emotion out on paper. And I don't know, it's just I had a lot of time on my hands growing up, so I don't know, I just found that artwork was kind of just, you know, something I knew how to do and didn't really have to try that hard at doing. And I think
I think, you know, all of the big fuss I made over it, you seem to be kind of surprised. Has anyone else ever really complimented your work and recognized the beauty in it?
Yeah, I think I'm just so modest. Like, certain things that aren't a big deal to me seem to be a big deal to other people. Like, I've had people look at my artwork and they're like, oh my gosh, like, what do you do with it? Do you sell it? Like, do you draw for other people? Is it in galleries? What do you do with it? And I'm just like, nothing. I don't do anything with it. I just do it and then add it to my collection. And it did have me thinking, like, you know, people have, like, a lot of talents and they don't really use them. So that was the thing that I was trying to really think, like, what can I do with my artwork? Like, I don't want it to just go to waste, like a talent go to waste. Like, so then that's when I was like, well, I like tattoos. So, I started to intern at a tattoo shop. And, you know, he was like, well, bring me in your portfolio. So I brought him in my, you know, portfolio. He liked it. And then he kind of took me under his wing and was, like, teaching me all the steps and tools into becoming a tattoo artist, which is a way of art to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
indeed.
I'm trying to use that toward that. But I've kind of discovered, since I started tattooing, I've discovered that I like canvas better because I like to get real messy. If I make a mistake, I could correct it. Tattooing is completely different. make a mistake, okay. You gotta keep it moving.
So that gives you an even greater sense of freedom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to worry about making a mistake, an error, just be.
And if my artwork is my artwork, not somebody else's, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's more stress when you're doing it on someone else, and if it's their type of work, and it doesn't matter if you don't like it, you still have to do it because they're, like, paying you to do it.
Mm-hmm. Tell the listeners what you did with my print that I was expecting. And how I found out.
What was the art?
Yeah, the art piece that I wanted.
Oh. I was moving. I had a certain amount of days to move. And with me, it's like I'm so used to moving. I move so much. And like with me, it's kind of like survival of the fitness. Like, you have to take what you need, not what you want. And with my art, it was kind of like, okay, well, I could always just draw this again. So, you know, I didn't think I needed it. So right before I saw you, I think I just took all my stuff off my wall and I threw it away because I didn't have any room for me to take it with me. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I threw it away. And then a few hours later, I saw you.
Yeah, I drive by.
Yeah, that was crazy. You could have just had it.
Mm-hmm. And I said, where's my artwork? He said, oh, my God, you're not going to believe this. It was like, oh, Ebony.
I said,
don't throw anymore. That's valuable.
It would be different if they were smaller pieces, but they were large. And, you know, like, I didn't
mm-hmm.
have anywhere to put them, especially not knowing where I was going to end up living-wise. I just had to make sure that I had things with me that I needed. And even though it killed me, it really did. I looked at my art, and I was like, oh, my gosh, like, I hate to do this. But, I mean, what am I going to do with it? Like,
mm-hmm. And that's the other situations that people don't really think about when youth grow up, you know, without their immediate family, that a lot of people have had an opportunity to leave things in their parents' garages and their attics or, you know, in an old room.
Exactly.
And there's no place, you know, for just dropping things, you know, and just a place of security, a place that's an anchor. And people just assume that, you know, once you turn 18, everything is cool because you no longer need your family. You no longer need parents. And that's a very, very important aspect of it. And actually someone told me, they said, you're going to have to get a bigger place either for the kids or your kids' stuff because you're turning into a storage unit. And I don't believe in throwing away anyone. Even my foster son, I didn't throw his things away from a little kid. And so he's like your age now. And Thanksgiving, he came and we went through all of his things and he kept laughing and he had more sense than I did. He took pictures of things before we got rid of them. I said, all these years I've been carrying this. Why didn't I think of that? But, yeah, that was very important. And I think I even asked you, well, which garbage bin? Like, let's go look in the garbage bin for it. And you said, like, no.
Yeah.
So the next time you have to do anything, you know who to have to get them, okay?
I know.
But I really am encouraging you, and I hope our listeners will just keep in touch with us because I will be posting it in our newsletters, in our Facebook page. We're working on creating a book and publishing a book mm-hmm. with your artwork, as well as some of your portrait because you also are a writer. And so your other gift and talent is?
I'm a songwriter. I do music. Yeah, pretty much. I do poetry, but my poetry kind of turns into music. So, yeah,
mm-hmm.
for the most part, I'm a songwriter.
Okay.
And, a lot of people, you know, call me up and like, oh, can you sing this to me? Or, you know, sometimes I just do it just because I just like to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So what I want you to do is to share with the world all these gifts that you've been just blessed with. And I remember there's a quote that says something to the effect of, we're not born to make a living. We're born to live, to make a living, but we're born to live our making. And I believe that also when I said when you do something that you enjoy, you also will do it well enough that someone will pay you to do it. And I believe that you're not being on somebody's employment list is also an opportunity for you to branch out and to share your gifts with the world. People
yeah.
will find value in your music. People will find value in your artwork. And, of course, people find value in you as a person, you know, all of that energy, all that positivity, all the beauty. And I think this is an opportunity for you to not be bogged down by what's going on in, you know, in the employment arena. And as you're getting your health together and you're taking time, even when you're not, don't have a lot of energy, it's time you can be doing some of these other things. So I, one of the goals that I am setting, and I can't set a goal for you, I'm setting it for myself, is to work with you in publishing your book of writing and artwork so that the world can share it, and we will also have a platform for you to share that on during the year 2012.
Okay.
That means it's going to be bugging you, and you're going to have to answer the telephone.
I know.
Wonderful. And tell people, because I just found your music page this week. I think, I never really even listened to any of it. I should have used that as one of our openings tonight. Tell listeners where they can
see
your music Facebook page.
Well, I know page. I have a YouTube page. It's eQueen27, like all, just one word. And that has, like, a lot of, you know, my music and have, like, a few videos that I've just made on my, like, spare time. But I also have a music page on Facebook. I just noticed last night that it's under an author and not music. I don't know what the difference is, but it's eSpaceQueen, just eQueen. And a lot of my music's on there, too. So either or, you get what's on there.
Okay, and I think I am looking to see if I could put it in the chat room. You still there?
Yeah.
Okay, it got really quiet. So that's E-Queen.
No, just E-Space-Queen.
E-Space-Queen, okay.
Yeah, that's on Facebook. And then I have a YouTube account where it's eQueen27, and it's just all one word.
eQueen27.
Yeah.
And that's on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I just put that in our chat room so people can look that up. So, can you believe the hour is up already?
No,
time flew, but your energy also lifted. I could feel it. Did you feel your energy lifting?
Yeah.
Yes. As we close, let me see if anybody else is in the line or if anyone in the chat room has any comments or questions they'd like to make. And trying to multitask here. And let's see, where are we over here? Oh, I think I left the studio page.
Uh-oh.
Okay, let's see, where are we here? This is time, because as I was talking, okay, is that it? Not quite. One more place. And we shall be able to see what's here. Okay, we have someone else online, and we have in the chat room. Let me see if someone wants to make a comment.
Okay,
we have someone from area code 707. Would you like to make a comment or ask a question of our guest?
I would. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. Okay, hi. Ebony, you are an inspiration, and thank you, Evelyn, for this broadcast. I've been listening to you. Evelyn asked one of the questions that I really wanted to know about, and that was what is your inspiration? You actually answered the question, but the question that you're first of all so young to you have a great deal of poise and you sound like you have a great deal of courage. I know you say you were raised by your grandmother. Does a great deal of your your courage? Does a great deal of that come from her?
I think the part that comes from her is just my my grandma. She, like, even when she's been there since day one, as far as, you know, me being diagnosed, and she has not, I have not seen her shed a tear. Like, she tries so hard to just be strong for me and for everybody else. I think maybe that part comes from her, just wanting to show people that, you know, it's not a stressful matter, that I can get through this, that it's going to be okay. But, you know, behind closed doors, when you're all by yourself, you do stress, you worry, you have all these questions that go through your head. But, I'll say the part that I think I got from my grandmother is just, you know, trying to be strong for not only myself, but for others around me who are trying to support me.
Yes. Yes. Well, you sound like a wonderful young woman, and I would love to see some of your artwork.
Thank you. Okay.
It has to be wonderful. So, Evelyn, thank you. This is Sharon, and I am just so thankful to listen to your program tonight.
Thank
it inspired
you.
Me. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. We're thankful for that call. Let's see if there's anyone else. Is there anything you would like to say to our listening audience, whether it's about dealing with the children or something that for young adults and children who've grown up without their parents, for anyone who might be dealing with a complicated medical situation, anything?
Yeah, just since I've got diagnosed with cancer, I've actually met a handful of people who have a friend of mine, mom, just, you know, found out she had cancer. Then their cousin, I met a person months later, they ended up with cancer. One of my very good friends' dad found out he just had cancer November 1st, and then he ended up passing away December 1st. So for some reason, it's like, it's just something that's really out there right now, like trying to get people. So I think before I got diagnosed with cancer, I used to have, like, these really bad stomach pains. And, you know, I wasn't acknowledging them. I wasn't paying attention to them. So I just really want to tell people to be aware, be more aware of, you know, the side effects and any type of abnormal pain that you might have. Go get it checked. I don't care if you just have a headache. Go to the doctor, because it can turn out to be something way more than what we expect it to be. And I think maybe if I would have paid more attention to my body at that time, I probably could have caught it earlier. But I just, you know, put it on the back burner, waited too long, and it blew up into something more than what it could have been. So, I just really wanted to, like, you know, tell people to just be aware. Because it's really out there. Like, it's really getting people.
And just our health is so important. And I really believe that our stress is connected to our health, and we have to really learn how to let go of things and let things out rather than internalize them. And that was something, you know, that I told you that I wanted to work with you on, you know, just to let things out, because that being strong sometimes is what puts even more stress on our bodies internally. And with this being the holiday season, I know last Christmas you would, you know, just really, this was all new to you. What were your thoughts last Christmas about where things would be this year? Your thoughts on last Christmas about what would unfold this year and what this Christmas would be like?
I have no idea. I don't try to think about what, like, because I'm the type of person where I've always had a plan in life. This many days or years from now, I want to be here, or I want to get this accomplished. And I've learned from being diagnosed with cancer that we really have no control over life. We could have a plan. And try our best to stick to that plan and that goal, but life has its own plan for us, and we have no idea what it is. So I kind of just live day by day. I try not to think too much about what I'm going to do next week or, you know, what am I going to do tomorrow. I kind of just let things pop up and happen however they happen. So I don't know. Last Christmas, I didn't have too many thoughts. I was just trying to get through, you know, probably that week, let alone think about this year.
Right. State at a time. And I entitled this interview as The Gift of Life, because a lot of people are stressing over Christmas about, you know, what they're going to buy, what they're going to get, who's going to be mad at them, and how much money they have to do this and that. And it's really not all about that. And I'm sure, I don't know what Christmas previous Christmas were like before you, but I'm sure right now that your most valuable gift, the gift that you value most is your life. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the message that I wanted to give our listeners, is that regardless of whatever else is going on in your life, that it's you know, the big picture is our life, period. All this other stuff is minute. It's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just minute. You know, at this point, it doesn't matter, you know, how big a Christmas tree you get or if you have one or not. It doesn't matter if you got somebody one gift or two gifts, or it doesn't matter if their gift was 25 cents or $25.
Mm-hmm.
It helps us to put things in proper perspective. So I thank you for being who you are. I just remember you as this little girl with the long pigtails. You were kind of a quiet side. You would smile, but the most I saw of you was when you were fighting with your brother. It's like, I did not say that.
Yeah, we used to argue like, can't
be. That's amazing. So I am proud of you. You are a beautiful young woman inside and out. And you know that I'm here and others are here from you. And just during over the next few months, any of our listeners that would like to support us in supporting you, what is your greatest need right now?
I don't know. Like, I don't really have one. I'm grateful for everything that I do have. Like, I have a roof over my head, clothes on my back, food in my stomach. That's pretty much all I really need. Like, I'm not a person who really just needs things. So, I don't know. I can't really just, nothing stands out just off the top of what I need.
Okay. What do you want?
I don't need for anything.
Okay. Well, you know, for one, you got a lot of love over here, so you just have to receive it. And, but we'll have something for you. And I'm just grateful for you and grateful for your being open to doing this interview and for even allowing, you know, me to share your story both in our newsletters, here on this call, and eventually we're going to get you in for our television interview.
Okay, that would be cool.
That'll be cool. All right. Well, thank you so much. And we will talk soon. And if you want to listen back to this, it should be available in about an hour.
Okay.
So
thank you so much, Miss E.
You're more than welcome, Miss E. And so we thank our listeners. We pray that everyone will have a wonderful holiday and Christmas. And whether you don't have everything that you would desire to have, maybe it's not the financial situation you desire to be in, or maybe you don't have the vehicle or don't have a vehicle at all, whether you don't have the resources to do things for people that you care about, or maybe you don't have the people that you really feel safe and comfortable with to call family, my take is to find someone who wants and desires the same thing as you do and to go forth with it. And as I shared, I think someone else's interview I did, I talked about how the holidays could sometimes be difficult without having the family intact. And I really say that, you know, after my children and foster children no longer with me, holidays weren't the same to me anymore because that's what I lived for. But I've learned to be able to find a different approach. And it can still be difficult. It can still be challenging. But when we really take note of our greatest gift and go through our gratitude list, there's nothing like it. So everyone have a wonderful Christmas, a happy new year, and do something special, not only for a child's heart, but for your inner child's heart. And we'll be back with you on the first Tuesday in January, and I believe that is January 3rd. And we have guests lined up, but at the moment, it's not in the top of my head. So keep doing wonderful things for yourself, for your inner child and others, and God bless. Bye-bye.
mothers and brothers crying. These are children are dying at the hands of the other child. I know her heart is breaking. Feel the earth is shaking. That river flows from the tears she cries. She cries.